Welcome to the Drop Temp Coffee Podcast. I'm Tim.
And I'm Carrie.
And we're two coffee roasters in the Pacific Northwest talking about the coffee business, the joy of being an entrepreneur, all things coffee roasting, and our coffee culture, and maybe coffee itself. Thanks for being here. We appreciate you listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is the Drop Temp Coffee Podcast. I am your co-host, Tim.
And I'm Carrie.
Oh my God, is coffee expensive?
Yes, coffee is super expensive.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about the things that we spend our money on in large quantity. And that starts with green coffee. It was our number one expense last year. Our materials and supplies represented almost 35% of our total income.
Sheesh.
Yeah, how about you?
I have to say the same thing. You know, right now, this is tax time. Everybody is doing their P&L reports. For those who don't know, profit and loss. That's kind of where you categorize where your spending is coming from. And then at the end is what your company actually made for the year. And looking at that as well, green coffee was...
Green coffee, number one.
Number two was rent.
You know, for me, number two is employment, but I'm not going to lie. I couldn't do it without them.
Oh, you need it.
Yeah. Like, it's just gotten kind of crazy, out of control. It's not a problem, y'all. We like that problem. It's not really a problem. However, rent's number three. And you find ourselves going through this a lot. We run into a challenge this year because we're going to need more bags. And who knew? By the way, do you know that bags are almost 62 cents a piece?
Well, let's take it. We have two different coffee roasting companies.
Right.
You know, you have expenses that you had to spend last year versus what I had to spend last year. So let's kind of go over that, because Roasted by Mom for a second, right? So Roasted by Mom, I obviously run the coffee company all by myself. So when I look at my profit and loss report, the number one big spend was green coffee. Following that was packaging, which is your cost of goods. So when you are a product-based business, you have items like your labels, your bags, anything that you have that you give into your product, that is considered cost of goods. And then on top of that, I have my rent, utilities, all the other things. So definitely green coffee was up there.
Green coffee has seen a really huge increase over the last 3 years. We've seen it more than double based on the instability that's going on in Brazil. By the way, y'all, when Brazil breathes, the rest of the world bends. That's exactly how it works. Whenever they are fearful of a bad season, prices magically go up. Yes, this commodity, defined as something that is set as semi-standardized pricing throughout the world, is the second largest traded commodity in the world, right behind oil. So we have one of those things. Number three for me is packaging cost of goods, because we go through a lot of bags. Had to order them twice last year. Number four is rent, utilities, and the cost of things like going to farmers markets. We call all those things as renting and leasing. Number five is equipment for us. We have acquired a roaster, which we are paying for, and a bagging machine. Now, all those things said, I think the challenge is making sure that you spend the right amount of money to be able to make money. What do you think, Carrie?
What I think is you have to be very careful with your selection, because with coffee and with the rising cost of goods, all that factored in, it's you can make margin of that, but the part of that margin is going to go back into buying more inventory, so that way you have more product to sell, right? So with coffee, it's a very cash-tight business, because you have to pay, you know, a certain amount of money right up front, because you're paying for the price per pound on coffee. And that cash flow, that money is tied up into your raw green coffee inventory. So until you roast it, until you put it into a bag, until you sell it, that's when you're going to see the returns of your investment. So you're investing into this product that you know you got to move. So with that said, as a roaster myself and has been built up a customer base for over the years, I need to be really selective, very careful of knowing what coffees are selling and what coffees are not selling. And do you feel the same way too, Tim, when it comes to purchasing green coffee?
As a matter of fact, I was just going to say that the number one factor in coffee is the quality and the overall price. We have a very tight standard for us. We look for coffees that are no lower than 84 cupping score from the Specialty Coffee Association of America. That's a standardized quality rating system based on 100 points. 84 is the minimum we will go. That's a pretty high standard right now. And we so far are having luck being able to find those in more affordable rates. Affordable rates can be argued. There are some very public companies like Genuine Origins. We do love Genuine Origins, whose rates run between, say, $4.75 and $7.50 a pound. There's a lot of math that goes along because, remember, you lose weight with coffee. Who knows? But we want to be really cautious that we get coffee that's really approachable and drinkable, because what you don't want to do is invest money in a coffee that's only going to be popular with coffee files. You want to make sure everybody's in there. Selection is really difficult. Really difficult.
That was kind of one of the questions I wanted to ask you in particular with your buying power. Is you obviously been running your company for multiple years. You understand your customer base. You know exactly what they like. Let's say you have a new coffee that you're interested in. What is decision making of, I know if I purchase this coffee, it is going to sell. How are my customers going to like this coffee? Even though I like it, will they like it? You know, you have those big question marks. So Tim, can you kind of walk through and talk about your purchasing decisions with green coffee besides numbers? Let's kind of walk through that.
Sure. The first thing is, I'm very lucky because I have people from farms and wholesalers that will contact me when they are looking at a coffee that has flavor profiles that I like. A good example of that is, we like coffees that happen to be nutty, chocolatey, fruity, or sweeter, like cooked sugars. Those are the four things that we look for in a coffee. So we will get contacted by farms as those coffee flavors come up in different coffees, and they will generally offer to send us samples that we can either roast or drink if they roast it for us, and we will do an actual taste test. We'll do a cupping. Our cupping generally is something that we use the three primary roasters in our place of, Bowie, Sharia, and myself. Ultimately, I have the say whether or not to go with something. So personal opinions play very clearly in this.
So that's interesting that you bring that out. So you, I mean, for you, obviously you're like, wow, this coffee is special, but I need to share it with my team because I need to make sure that my team is on board and we have an understanding of this coffee, and you have your team actually cup the coffee and try it out. But you take an unconventional approach to cupping.
Yes.
So both Tim and I do. We don't do traditional cuppings. What we do is, and I'm speaking for Tim and myself, because we actually both do sampling on a V6 Hario or Clever Dripper, a filtered coffee. Now, some people in the specialty industry will be like, why? That is so dumb. Like, you need to taste everything, the nuance of coffee. But I feel like, from a consumer perspective, and maybe you agree with me or not, when we do a cupping with a Hario V60 or a Clever Dripper compared to not doing the traditional way, we are actually tasting the coffee that the way the customer is going to taste the coffee, because they're not going to taste it. They're not going to buy a bag of coffee and do a cupping session in their home. They're not going to taste for defects, because they're not. Obviously, we are going to pick out the defects and we're going to get an understanding of the coffee sample. But in all reality, we're tasting what the customers taste.
I agree with that. I don't necessarily like to remove defects if they're going to add something to the coffee. Now, you and I have a slightly different take on this. Certainly, what I feel is that a coffee experience should be starting at the cup. And this is why I really like the Clever for myself. Now, there are other ways of personally I'll taste it. But yes, the team has to have some input. If they're going to point something out that I haven't seen, or if there's something that they don't like about the coffee, we have a very open discussion about that. But for the most part, we have three people who like different coffees, but they all tend to agree on the marketability. So one of the things is flavor. One of the things is deciding whether or not people are going to want it. And one of the things is to figure out whether or not we can sell it at a price range. We try to be relatively low priced per pound, and it takes a coffee within a certain spectrum to be able to sell a coffee at that rate and still make money, you know? I think that for me, I'm not looking for the defects in a coffee. I'm looking for the positives. So I will start. What was it? We tried a Kenyan the other day, right? And the two of the three roasters really liked it, but I did not. I found it a little earthy for me, a little, when I use the term earthy, I'm can jokingly say like mud, but
vegetable.
Yeah.
Tomato.
Yeah. Ew. Yeah. Like,
we don't like tomato. Tim and I.
No, thank you.
No tomatoes. No.
Yeah, that's the thing. Kenyan coffee, the higher end, is known for things like tomato or salty. Those are actual flavors. I'm not a fan at all, really. I really like chocolate. I really like fruit. Those are kind of where I feel like I get strongest out of. And Kenyan just isn't that coffee for me.
So it kind of leads me into kind of going back and talking about your coffee selection. Because for those who don't know, Tim is a type 1 diabetic.
Yep.
Right? And there's a story behind Blind Coffee Roasters, which I think we touched based on. What is really interesting, Tim, for you is because you cannot enjoy the sweets like many people can, unfortunately, you know.
It's true.
It is.
Yep.
You tend to pick out really nice, sweet, fruit bomb coffees. Can you kind of like talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. All right. So we're going to dip into processing for a second. Processing is how you clean the cherry off the coffee. Coffee is the pit of a fruit. One of the elements you'll find in most coffees is fruit flavors. One of the coffees I tried the very first that really showed me what this coffee could be was from Ethiopia, and the coffee tasted like blueberries. As a matter of fact, you couldn't miss it. We call it a coffee bomb because it literally just hits you in the face. It'll hit you in the face with sweetness. I also have a terrible sweet tooth, which is a terrible thing to have as a diabetic. And for the record, Blind Coffee Roasters, because I've had to have eye surgery. That's a short version. You can contact me later. I'll tell you all about it. But I do. I fall to the sweeter side of coffee. I like things with a cooked sugar flavor, fruity flavor. Natural process leaves some of the fruit on the bean. Honey process cleans coffee in fermenting coffee cherry juice, basically, and carbonic maceration will add other fruits to the process of removing cherries from coffee. So you'll generally find spicier, sweeter elements in it.
Tim, when you explain that process to people, and especially to other diabetics that you meet, like whether you're at farmers markets and stuff like that, I'm also curious too. If you drink this coffee, like, do you notice a spike in your blood sugar?
No, actually.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, you know, when you're getting a fruit bomby coffee, I think the thing to remember is you're not actually drinking fruit juice. What you're drinking is something that has the essence of a coffee flavor. And when we say coffee, a fruit bomb, it means that it has permeated the fruit. So when you're cooking it, when you're cooking coffee, roasting it, you don't get more sugar, but you get the sense of it. It's a little hard for people to understand. I guess you were going to compare wine, red wine particularly. Wow, I started singing right there. When you're talking about red wine particularly, there are these detailed flavors that can come through it. Like one of my favorite descriptors is asparagus in red wine. Believe it or not, that's a thing. I think the fruit in coffee is natural, but it is something that I have always preferred. It's a little more interesting, and it kind of brings that. Does it spike my blood sugar? Absolutely not. Coffee is a freebie. As long as you're drinking black, there's no spike at all. Does it affect any other parts of my body negatively? No, not unless I'm drinking way too much. But it doesn't spike the blood sugar. As a matter of fact, it's an actual neutral, net zero.
Has anyone asked you that question?
All the time. Okay.
I don't know. Have fellow diabetics asked you about that?
Fellow diabetics do occasionally ask me, but people who are drinking coffee and type 1 diabetics have probably gone through this with their endocrinologist or their dietitian.
Okay, because I never really asked you that question. And I'm just like, well, you know, as a roaster myself, I know that, you know, obviously the sugars are going to get caramelized, right. But then it's like, you know, I never think about like, is it going to be metabolized? Is insulin going to go up? You never think about those things. Well, that's pretty cool. That's a little bit of, you know, science dropping on that. Thank you for, you know, kind of walking through and talking about like your buying process with blind coffee roasters from your point of view.
No, I appreciate that. Well, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
All right. We drink our coffee a little bit differently. I know that you prefer cold. You prefer iced coffee drinks?
I'm a millennial. Of course I like my iced coffee.
All right.
And my cold brew.
All right. So, well, with that said, what is it about the cold coffee that you like?
Okay. So I'm a mom. I have a 7-year-old. And just like any other moms, we try to make our coffees hot and drink it hot. But you got your kids running around and you get distracted. And the next thing you know, you get to cold coffee. That is one point of view on that. For me, iced coffee, I think it was really my start drinking iced caramel macchiatos from Starbucks because that was the cool hip thing. If you walked around your high school campus, this is back in the early 2000s. In the early 2000s, Starbucks was in. If you had iced caramel macchiato and you're walking around campus, it was a status thing. And that was kind of like frappuccinos and iced coffee that kind of transcend. But then I grew out of the sugary, milky stuff, and I transitioned into black coffee and having iced coffee, iced Americanos, and then the cold brew thing happened, and I got into the cold brew thing. So that's kind of where the whole iced coffee trend is. And when it's snowing outside in Oregon, damn sure bet I will have an iced Americano when it's 20 degrees outside.
Okay. I accept you for your differences.
Thank you.
Now, the reality is for me that I think we've all come from that. What do you think? You think everybody puts cream and sugar or whatever in their coffees to start? You think? I think so.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to touch base a little bit on that. Okay. I think when people start their coffee journey, traditionally, people knew that they put cream and sugar into their coffee. That is the most Americana thing. You go to a diner like Denny's, or you saw your parents putting cream and sugar in their coffee. You know, that's kind of the norm. It comes to a point where people's palates get refined and changed, and maybe they want to change up something different with their coffee experience. So they're like, why am I putting all this cream and sugar in? Let me taste it for what it is. And some people will find that the coffee that they taste is really, really horrible, depending on what you get. Or they get a really amazing coffee that they're like, oh my God, it tastes like blueberries and I want to drink it black. So it really depends on folks' coffee experience and what stage they're going through. There are people who still like the cream and sugar in their coffee because there's something about the taste of the coffee that they still can't get over. That's fine. That's okay. Everybody has a different coffee journey. And us as roasters, we should, you know, be able to respect that because we want to be inclusive with people who, number one, they're coming to us to buy coffee. This is my experience. I have folks that come in and they will put cream and sugar in the cafe and they would apologize to me saying, I'm sorry, I know your coffee's good, but I have to have cream and sugar in my coffee. And I just said, it's fine. Look, here's the thing. You walked into the door of my roastery. You came in. You bought a cup of coffee from me. You want to put cream in your coffee? You do it. You want to put sugar in it? Fine. Even though you're getting a natural processed raspberry balm coffee, you're still going to put cream and sugar in it? That's okay. Because at the end of the day, there's obviously something about me that you came in, you support, and I'm supporting you in your coffee journey. I think that's me bringing value to the customer and not shaming them like a lot of their experiences with a lot of local independent shops.
Yeah, see, that's, I will never run my shop like that. I know you don't run your shop like that either. The idea is if you're going to do something, if you're going to put cream and sugar in, do it. You be you. Live your best life. That's great. The texture of coffee changes when you add cream or sugar to it. The taste changes. The acidity level changes. It's all about making it what's good. I will say this, though. Of the five best cups of coffee I've ever had, and by the way, that question's coming next. The five best coffees I've ever had, none of them were treated with any kind of cream or sugar. And those are the things that really shocked me and surprised me. How about it? Let's hear your five best cups of coffee.
Oh, dude. Okay. Five best cups of coffee. Obviously, my very first cup of Bolivia coffee I roasted at home for the very first time, my first ever coffee batch.
That was your very first
batch, very first,
right? Yeah.
Washed Bolivia coffee. That was delicious. That is going to always be up there. Number two, I had a coffee flight from Royals Cafe there in Oakland.
The Crown.
That was amazing. Remember, I called you and I was like, yo, Tim, this is the greatest coffee ever. And you're like, yeah, I know, Carrie. That was a great experience. Let's see. The Boy and the Bear. They're based in Los Angeles. They have a couple of locations, but the one I visit is in Redondo Beach, California. Amazing Colombian coffee. I always, when I get down there and I visit family or friends, I always try to make a point to visit the Boy and the Bear in Redondo Beach. And right there next, it's super close to the beach, but really nice coffee. They had a Colombia coffee, and I'm trying to remember if it was a natural process or a wash process. I can't remember, but it was so delicious. It had a cola note in it, and it reminded me of Coca-Cola. Totally reminded me of that. It was crazy how delicious that coffee was. So Boy and the Bear, for sure. I think that's three.
Yep, that's three.
Honestly, let's see. Gosh, there's so much coffee that I could put up there, and I can't think of the other two spots I could put up
there.
It's
okay. No pressure here.
You know what? The Columbia Geisha that you have on your menu.
Really?
That's really good.
Oh, my God. I'm so flattered by that. Thank you.
That's up there. Honestly, I can only think of four right now.
All right. Well, I thought about this before. First of all, thank you. That's incredibly kind of you. I thought about this before, and I've traveled around a lot. I've been to other countries a lot. I've tried a lot of different kinds of coffee. I would say that the number one coffee thing I could drink every day, the rest of my life, if I had no other choice, from Jamaica, Jamaican Blue Mountain, when it's the right coffee. It's really touchy. It'll surprise you from being as good as it is. Very mild. Love that coffee. It's probably my favorite. The best cup of coffee I've ever had at a shop. You know, I got to give it to Kiss the Hippo in London. We love you guys.
I was going to say, that has to be up there.
Man, yeah. You know, I was humbled. You know, I like roasting coffee. I love it. I love the hobby that went crazy. But when you sit down at somebody's shop and you just shake your head and wonder how they did that, that's amazing. I want to give some love to Verve Coffee Roasters in Santa Cruz. The very first natural process coffee I'd ever experienced was at Verve. We do love Verve. Great, great people down there. Super talented roasters. That natural coffee they have from Gedeb in Ethiopia. Oh man, tastes like maraschino cherries dipped in chocolate. I'm going to give the first time I ever drank Geisha, the right Geisha. I love that. I thought that was great. It's kind of where we ended up drinking the coffee that we now serve. But number five, I got to tell you, it's the most surprising coffee I've ever had was from Malawi, and it was a higher end. I don't remember the variety, but it was a washed coffee, and it really tasted like I was taking a bite out of a Hershey's bar. It had, you could almost taste the granule sugar, and it was crazy. Coffee is great wherever it is. I love coffee from all the countries. I got to give one more, Puerto Rico. Oh my God, Puerto Rican coffee. Get Puerto Rican coffee, y'all. And as soon as we can get that in, we're going to do it. Thank you for letting me share. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. You know, I was just sitting here thinking, I wanted to kind of circle back. And for people who are interested in becoming coffee roasting entrepreneurs, we were really touching base about average cost, COGS, stuff like that. And we kind of got in.
We got a little sidetracked there, didn't
we? Yeah,
we
got a little sidetracked. So I want to kind of circle back into kind of going more in depth with coffee and how to put it back together.
Right.
And what, as a coffee entrepreneur, what margins you should expect to see should you follow market price? So I'm going to start off with my thoughts on it.
Please do.
Okay.
Please do.
So when we're talking about creating a product, we're talking about creating a bag of coffee. So obviously it starts with the green coffee. So there's different variables with that. What coffee, what region? We're going to talk about the process of coffee. Is it a natural process coffee, washed, anaerobic? Those also play a variable with your price. Currently, right now, as we're talking in the C market, the average price of green coffee is somewhere between, on the low end, about $4, and more on the high end, you're looking at $8. So between $4 to $8 is what your average cost for green coffee per pound is at the time of this recording. You also have to factor in, what is your shrinkage? With coffee, you have water weight. And when you roast the coffee, the pounds of coffee that you put in your roaster is not going to be exactly what you put in. Depending on the volume or your batch size of the coffee that you're roasting, you're looking between 12 to 16% of moisture loss. Now, that also plays into density, which I'm not going to get into the science.
Yeah, that's a little complicated.
That's a little deep. But consider moisture loss. So you have the coffee, it's freshly roasted. Well, you need a bag to put it in, right? You need to figure out what style bag that you want. You want a side gust, you want a
flat bottom.
You know, there's variable factors. You want a CO2 valve, you don't want it. Zipper or not zipper. Tintai, you know, there's so much customization with that. And that's another thing is, do you want to customize your bags or do you want to slap a sticker on it? You have to look at those costs. So let me break it down to how Roast of My Mom kind of factors in.
Okay.
So again, you're looking between $4, $8 a pound, depending on the coffee that you select.
Can we pull an example of that Brazil you got in that I love so much?
Oh, the Mom Goes Nutty?
Yeah. Okay. That's a great coffee.
Mom Goes Nutty is probably one of my top three selling coffees that I have in my shop. It is a natural processed Brazilian coffee, milk chocolate, peanut butter tones, low acidity, super smooth. It's an everyday coffee drink, right? When we're talking about the cost of goods, we're looking at the cost of the bags. So my bag is a flat bottom bag, 12 ounces. It has a CO2 valve and a zipper. I also have stickers that I put on the bag. So my label. And then I have another sticker that I put on that tells people what the coffee is. So on average, factoring in the moisture loss, the cost of goods for putting my bag together with the labels, stickers, and the cost of the coffee, I'm averaging between about $4.65 to about $5.50. So with the Mom Goes Nutty, I'm a little bit more on the lower end.
Okay, so I'll give my side of that. We look for coffees that are going to, at the end of the day, make us enough money to operate, pay the employees, buy more coffee. So we're looking at about a $20 pound. We start from that number and work our way backwards. To do that, we're figuring about 68 cents a bag. We figure about $4 to $5, $6. $6 max right now is where we're at. And in that range, we lose about 16% when we cook it. By the way, wanted to add this. It increases in volume and it decreases in weight, kind of like popcorn. You know, that it's, I had someone call it a kernel. It's not actually a kernel. It's a seed, but we'll take it. So we start with the coffee. That costs us $5. We lose 16% of that. So an actual pound ends up being about $5.80, roughly.
So, okay, that's great.
Right.
So what margins should we aim for? So I'll give you an example for me. My margin, obviously, we want to be more than 50%. I try to aim for 60 or 70% margin because the reason why we want to go that high is we want to cover our overhead costs, rent, utilities, all the things. And even though I'm a solopreneur, I have no employees, I got to figure out a way to pay myself too. So I have to incorporate my labor costs into that. And how about you, Tim?
You get paid?
Okay.
Oh, man. Well, so for me, you know, I'll take the cost of the coffee after we roast it. I'll add to it the cost of the bagging. We'll add some labor cost to it because there's always some sort of labor. We figure out how many bags we can do an hour. We'll take that number. We'll multiply that number by about 2.5 or 3, which means that the margins for us are about 58% to 68%. And for us, that margin helps us cover all those costs. I jokingly say about you getting paid, but the reality is I am very lucky that I get a car. I occasionally get to eat, right?
I put gas in the tank.
Yeah, that too.
I have to feed myself.
Yeah. And well, you have a boy too.
I have a family I got to take care of.
I think the thing to remember is if you're going to start a coffee roasting company, if you want to become an entrepreneur, the trick is to set an attainable goal. What we did was we started a coffee roasting company, Blind Coffee Roasters, so that I just wouldn't have to pay for my own coffee for the rest of time. That's really it.
What do we know now that we could have done differently?
Oh, man. I think the thing that I could have done differently, honestly, is cut down my offerings. I started with almost 18 different single origin coffees, made it very hard to maintain those coffees on my menu. We're down to about 12 single origin coffees right now, and we're probably going to trim that down a little further, but I would have cut down my selection and would have made it easier to bring those coffees in at a reasonable price.
You know, it's interesting as a coffee entrepreneur, like I'm trying to, you know, cover my bases and you're throwing like a blanket or like a net, right? You want to make sure you grab everybody and everybody buy your coffee. So you have to like source every single coffee that you can that you know people are going to enjoy. Right. But then over time you realize, yeah, no, that doesn't work.
One of the things I'll tell people is if you're going to roast coffee, roast what you love. Because if you don't do that, you're not being honest to yourself. It's amazing to me how many people in the industry run coffee roasting companies and don't drink coffee. I don't get that. I drink my own coffee. I drink your coffee too. As a matter of fact,
I drink your coffee too.
I know. I'm like, okay, so, you know, because we love coffee. I think it's important to be able to experience coffee. If you're going to try to get into coffee roasting and you don't drink coffee, you probably shouldn't do it. You probably ought to find something else to do.
Right. So what other things that you would also change? Do differently?
Oh, man. I probably would have looked at customized bags earlier because the branding is super important. We talked about that in the previous episode. Your branding is exceptional. It took me about 5-6 years to get to the point where I was at a branding level that I was happy with. So it was constant development.
Agree.
I would have cleaned up. I didn't read my way through my first website. I trusted somebody to go on the website. It just didn't work so well. So I finally realized how many mispronunciations and grammar fouls we had. So I would have been more careful about that. I think the final thing I would have done is paid for advertising more at the beginning.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that getting your name out there is really difficult. So if you can actually take care of that in advance by buying advertising in the right places, I think it really pays itself off. How about, give it to me, Carrie. Go ahead.
I'm ready to spit it out. So I definitely, you've touched base on a couple of things, but I might have a little bit of a different point of view on it.
No, I'm dying to hear it. Let me hear it.
So number one, definitely branding is really important, especially when you are in a industry that's heavily saturated like coffee. Branding is probably the most important thing. Originally, when I started my coffee company, for those who don't know, I started my coffee roasting company as Elliott & Murray Coffee Roasters. I wanted to keep it as a family name because I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs on my mom's side and my dad's side. Anyway, fast forward, I named my company that because I wanted to make it family friendly. But over the couple of years, I realized that people were not connecting with that name. People thought I was an attorney's office. They're like, and people kept asking, who's Elliott? Man. Who's Murray? And I have to explain, oh, they're both my names, whatever. So I did a rebrand in 2023, which was Roasted by Mom, which actually the name of the coffee was originally a Mother's Day blend. And people really connected and resonated with that. So it took me a little bit of a while to really say, I'm going full force. I'm changing everything. And thanks to you, Tim, you actually really helped motivate me to do that. My image, my look, my branding, my message, because it aligned more for my values, being a feminist, female, forward coffee roasting company in a male-dominated industry. And especially as a mother, I wanted to represent more moms who work in the coffee industry. So that's what my message and what my branding is all about. So I wish I would have came up with Roasted by Mom a long time ago, but here we are now. Number two thing, SEO, search engine optimization. So with those few things, because I didn't know who I was, I didn't really have a true identity. It was hard for me to understand my market and plug in SEO keywords, but now that I've learned and understand the importance of SEO keywords, having a functional website, those things are really important because people will find you, they will discover you, they want to buy coffee. And if they don't have a great consumer experience on your website, they're not going to buy coffee and they're probably not going to return again. And so that's really important. E-commerce is actually really, really important. So that can be something else we could talk about on another day.
That in itself is one of those subjects that we can go on and on and on with.
Yeah, and I'm trying to stick with the bullet points.
Yeah. Yeah, no worries. Okay, so you got two.
I got two. So the third one would be being very selective with my coffee. I think that's something you and I both agree on. Knowing that not everybody's going to be your customer. I think that's a really tough thing that a lot of business owners go through.
Right.
Is that people will buy a bag of coffee. They won't like it. They want their money back. It's nothing against you. It's just their palate. And maybe that's something that they were used to and they wanted to try something different. It didn't work out. And honestly, you can't take things literal to heart. I mean, on some things, but you know, if someone's not going to like your coffee, that's okay. Backpedaling a little bit with all that being said is roast what you love. People will love it. People will buy it. It's just not going to be everybody's cup of tea. Okay, point number four. I should have not tried too many things at once. I think that's a really huge thing. Those who don't know, I'm a Gemini. I like to explore. I'm artistic. I'm innovative. I'm creative. I wanted to do things and, oh, well, I see someone doing this, so I'm going to copy their style. I see someone doing that, I'm going to copy it. Those were epic fails. So I had a learning process of where I was trying to do things that I thought would support my business, but then it crashed and burned because either I didn't go fully into the project or, you know, I got distracted or something. Anyway, there were just a lot of lessons of like things I wish I would have not wasted my time and investment on. I had to be really careful on staying focused and staying focused on what's making me grow.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. You know, to talk about people liking or disliking, I think for me, I do a lot of face-to-face. We're at Farmers Markets a lot. It's one of our main mm-hmm. platforms. We answer the question, you know, what? Tell us about your coffee. I hear that a lot, right? What I'm trying to do is figure out if people want their, look, let's face it. If somebody wants Folgers, I'm not your guy. I'm not that person.
You nailed it on the head on that one. I had to really have a conversation with yourself because as entrepreneurs, you do have meetings with yourself.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time. You know, Carrie and Carrie are having a sit down. We're having a meeting. I'm like, listen, girl, they like their Folgers coffee. They don't like your coffee. It's okay, boo. At the end of the day, there is going to have someone who's going to love your mom goes nutty or your badass mama. It's just not them. It's okay.
Well, the other part to remember is, you know, you're dealing with subjectivity, right? Everybody has an opinion, right? And everybody's allowed to have their opinion. And this is the thing about coffee. Everyone deserves a great cup of coffee. And to be honest with you, you might not be able to supply that great cup of coffee to them. Maybe they think something else is great. That's okay. This is the thing. We welcome subjectivity. I tell people all the time, hand them a card. I want to hear what you think. Let me know what you think of the coffee.
Yep.
The reality is that I feel that I have a pretty good offering, that I can find things that people like. The thing that I really get hurt, the thing that bugs me the most, the thing that really bugs me the most is people that look at a $20 pound of coffee and act as if it's not reasonably priced. We both know 20 bucks a pound is reasonable for the market.
Oh, don't get me started on
that.
That's,
you know,
basically it's people not understanding our industry. People are not understanding their business because they walk into a grocery store, they see that a bag of Pete's coffee or Starbucks coffee is going to be on the shelf. They're going to sell a 12 ounce bag for $10. Sometimes if they run a sale, it'll be $8 for that. But people don't understand how the industry works, what our costs are involved. And so they look at it face value and say, you're too damn expensive. And it's like, you know, oh, well. But moving on to my last point.
Yeah, please. Please do.
Okay. So I talked about doing, I think one of the last things that I would say, networking. I have really bad imposter syndrome. Like, you don't think I have imposter syndrome now talking on this podcast because I'm talking to one of my amazing friends right across from me, but I do. I have imposter syndrome, and that's okay. A lot of entrepreneurs do. For me, it's getting out of my bubble, talking to people, letting people know who I am. Today, earlier, I actually got out of my bubble. I went to a networking event, and it was a Chamber of Commerce networking event in Beaverton. And I introduced myself. People didn't know who I was. I said, hi, how you doing? My name is Carrie. I am the owner of Roasted by Mom Coffee. Their response, what's that? I've never heard of Roasted by Mom. You know, I gave them the spiel. And they're like, wow, female empowerment. I love it. And I said, yes, yes. The estrogen is flowing. Come on by. I'll make you a latte. You get freshly roasted coffee. And they say, you know what? I will. I love it. I'm coming in. Bang.
Networking for me is talking to people face to face. Like, that's my comfort zone. That's where I'm
my comfort. Oh, you're so good at it.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, I like talking to people about my favorite subject. So I'm going to wrap this up. I want everybody to know that we believe very strongly in your ability to become an entrepreneur in coffee or otherwise. And personally, we want you to do well. If there's any questions that you have, you want to get a little deeper into what we're doing, please send us a note. And by the way, if you like what you're hearing, please subscribe. Please subscribe. We'd love to get you included in our family.
Yes, subscribe to our podcast. Leave a review. That really helps out as well. You can find us on all streaming platforms, including Amazon Music or Amazon Podcast, actually. We just got onto there, so I'm really excited about that. So we wanted to thank our sponsors for sponsoring this. First of all, our main sponsor, Primo Roasting Equipment. Thank you so much for the folks there that gave us the ability to be able to help us produce our podcast.
We have somebody special we're bringing on, but we also want to thank Office Evolution for the use of our studio. Thank you, Office Evolution. By the way, if you're on the West Side, please look up Office Evolution. They have very nice spaces, and it's a shared office space. You should definitely consider coming over here. The new one that I'm super proud to talk about today, we want to welcome San Cristobal Green Coffee Importers. People bring in Mexican coffee from the Nayarit region exceptional coffees. We're bringing them on. We have them on a regular menu. Great people there. Thank you, guys. We really, really love having you on board. And we can't wait to see where it goes. So San Cristobal Coffee Importers, cheers and thanks.
And we are going to also leave their information in the video description or the podcast description that you can go ahead and find out more information about them. And if you get in contact with any of the companies, just let them know that you heard the Drop Temp Coffee podcast. And we really appreciate that. So thank you so much for tuning in, whether you're watching it or listening. Hope you guys have a great day, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
You can become a sponsor too. Thank you very much, y'all. Have a great one.
Thanks for joining us. If you like our podcast or our coffee, give us a 5-star review whenever you listen to podcasts. You can order our coffee at blindcoffeeroasters.com or roastedmymom.com. Got a question for us? Go ahead and email us at hello@droptemp.coffee.